Welcome to Day Zero Update for March 23rd, 2025. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Dan Red Victoria.
And yeah, we've got a bunch of news this week as GDC has happened and a number of things got announced this week. We got a bunch of stuff here you can look forward to over the near future and beyond, as well as plenty of things to talk about that we've been playing. So I'll kick that off here. I've been playing a game called Roguelite Deck Builder. And to be specific, it is Rogue Space Light, as in light bulb, Space Deck, Space Builder. A game that is on Steam. I think it's $4 normally, but it's on sale right now for $3. And it's a game where you build decks. A very simple concept, but in the vein of like a game about digging a hole. You're kind of set on one task, as you are sort of this person, I guess. You might be a demon, I don't know. You are in this house with a person called Husband that looks like a weird, I don't know, like claymation character of sorts, has like a halo on their head or whatever, and they're just like, yeah, we should build a deck, you know, make some money out of that. And in that process, essentially it lays down wood for you. You move your mouse around to pick a spot where you're going to nail in a nail, and you then move your mouse to swing a hammer at this nail, and it's does not work necessarily the way you might expect it to, so it takes a bit of getting used to, and even then I've done a handful of decks now, and that is still a challenge. And yeah, as you complete decks, you get money for it. If you get perfect hits on a nail, you get extra money. If you hit your hand holding the nail, you lose $1. And you get these things called, I think, deviant nails that are just weird little nails that are often talking to you or just doing weird stuff as you're hitting them in. Some will make it easier to get perfect hits so that you can kind of build up a, you can potentially build up a combo of sorts, but I've never really done that. You might see a bug walking around on the plank of wood, and if you hit it, you get a bunch of extra money out of that. So you're kind of encouraged to mess around with that. And that money you can spend at the shop to upgrade all of your items. Upgrade your nails, your hammer, your wood, your lights, because the rogue lights part of this is that the light just randomly turns off every so often and then back on, kind of thing. It's not really that big of a deal, but there's a bunch of stuff to upgrade in the shop. Like, you can make the bugs easier to flatten and more valuable. You can make your hand less prone to getting hit or whatever. And there's also like a stock option that you can buy that just gets you extra money when you complete a deck, kind of thing. And I believe the ultimate goal is to pay $1 million for this key that will get you out of this house for good. Your freedom costs $1 million. I've not gotten there yet, but it's been kind of a fun, sort of chill game, where I'm just jump on, do a deck or two, and then jump off and do something else. So I've done a handful of decks so far, and I've been just enjoying that as kind of the weird little game I'm playing for the moment. So there's that. Let's see. The other game I've been playing, One Lonely Outpost, is a Game Pass game. I believe it's on everything as well. It is basically, you know, your standard life sim kind of thing, like a Stardew Valley and whatnot. The premise is that you are on this sort of voyage, this job to settle this planet that this corporation has had you do. And as you kind of get there, you kind of find out that, oh, you're not given details or something has changed because this planet seems more inhospitable than you were expecting. And it's kind of a deserty planet of sorts. And so you're kind of tasked with trying to get food growing and, you know, make it more hospitable. And I believe at a certain point you grow to having like an actual like town of sorts with other people there. Where I'm at, it's kind of still early on, maybe 8 or 9 days in. But at this point, also found signs of something that was here before you, some sort of alien structure of some sort, and you're trying to figure that out as well along the way. But mostly I'm trying to go around the map here and try to find where these different resources I'm looking for to craft new machines and do all that kind of stuff. Start getting, you know, a forge that lets you turn all the ore into ingots and all that kind of stuff. You know, all the things that you would expect this sort of game to do. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at on that right now. Enjoyable, nice looking, all that to it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's kind of what you're kind of going to get out of it. Let's see. Also been playing some more MLB The Show 25. Digging into some of the Diamond Dynasty stuff and trying to complete some of these challenges and whatnot. But not really much more to say about that. And then the last game I got here is a game I got on my Playdate that came out, or they had a big sale recently, and this was one of the games I picked up off of it. It is essentially a game where you are turning the crank to dig down this hole, and you get currency out of that, and you use that to buy these upgrades that get you more money and all that. And once you get 99 upgrades on each of the things that it sells to you, then you can work towards the big goal that costs like 999,999,999 of the currency. And that's kind of where I'm at right now, is trying to grind out that currency. I'm in like the 500 million range. Takes a bit, but still been working on that. But the point where I'm at is like 30 minutes in, so it's not necessarily a huge time sink or anything. So I'm just popping it on every so often, doing some digging, and then taking a break for a bit. So, but that's been pretty much what I've been doing. So how about you, Brandon? What have you been doing?
Well, I finished Wonderstop a couple days ago, and my review is now up on the up on SmashPad, so anybody can go and read it for themselves. I ended up giving it a 4.5 because the game was pretty much good everywhere. The only exception was the there's like some randomly generated mechanics that occasionally clash with the scenery. Things like where like weeds or flowers that are supposed to grow randomly out in the wild occasionally will end up growing through like a rock or a tree, and it ended up tearing through the texture and everything. But other than that, I really didn't have any complaints. It was a great game. Yeah, it's, I highly recommend it. It's especially if you're looking for something that you can play that you can genuinely relax with. Like the stakes in this game are so low that it is almost impossible to lose. So yeah, just highly recommend it is all I'm going to say. But on top of that, I used my PS Plus account and I downloaded Arcade Paradise. This is a business simulator game, where you are playing an individual whose father owns a chain of laundromats, and because he's trying to teach you to be responsible, he makes you manager of one of them. And while you're there, you go into a back room and find out that there's a couple of arcade machines back there. And while you're back there, you go through like the hoppers, and for those of you who've never like worked at like a coin place or whatever, hoppers are the things that collect all of the change that goes into the machines, so that you know the owners can take them out at the end of the night. And basically, you find out that the arcade machines are actually making more money than the laundromat is. So you try to convince your father to, you know, convert it into an arcade or put more money into the arcade side of the business because, you know, the numbers show that it's making more. He doesn't believe you. He just thinks it's an excuse so that you can play games for what forever. So you end up sort of having to do this thing where you're secretly running an arcade as well as the laundromat itself. And basically the way the game works is that every day you go in and you go into the laundromat. First thing is first that you basically do every time is clean up the place, because basically the place is covered in garbage every time you go in there. Then you put any laundry that any customers have left out into the machines, and, you know, do a laundry load, put it in the machine, clean it, then put it in the dryer, and then collect it after it's dried and put it for the customers to collect. And depending on how fast you do it, you get more money from it. But you really don't have to do that. The whole operation makes money whether or not you are doing any of that or not. But you can collect more money faster if you do. But at the same time, as you're getting all the funds, you are then going online. And by the way, this game takes place in like the mid to late 90s, because, you know, it had to be during a time period when arcades were still relevant, and getting new games to put. And eventually it gets to the point where your sister, who was the person who suggested bringing in the arcade machines in the first place when she was managing it, sort of greases some palms and lets you remodel the back of the thing and turn it into a legit arcade space. You try and buy more and more games, more stuff to put back there, while also operating the laundromat. And the actual laundromat place, it's kind of it's all of it, like all of the essential functions for it are essentially gamified. For example, when you're taking out the trash, once you've collected the trash just enough, you can go around to the dumpster that's around the corner of the building, and there's like this target game that you do in order to, you know, toss the trash bag into the dumpster, and depending on how well you do, you end up getting more money out of it. There's also a similar thing with, picking up like chewing gum that people stick to places, where you're, you know, using, it's like one of those meters where it's like it goes from like blue to yellow to red, and you're trying to figure out how much force you're going to use. And depending on how you do, you know, you'll get money from it. And there's even also a thing where you got to clean the toilet as well. And on top of that, there's just all the stuff that you got to do with maintaining the place. But the actual like arcade portion of it is, first of all, fun, because all of the arcade games are playable. Like, they're all complete games. Now, granted, they're more or less based on, like, actual classic games and their design. There's, like, a game that's sort of based around Candy Crush. There's a game that's based around Pac-Man. There's another one that's more or less based around Smash TV. You know, stuff like that. And, you know, and eventually it gets to the point, at the end of the night, you collect all the money, put it in the safe, and then go home for the day. And, well, evening. Because, like, the place closes at, like, 11 o'clock at night. So, yeah, that's Arcade Paradise. Actually an extremely addictive game, because the sort of game loop of it is extremely addictive. It tickles the part of my brain that, you know, wants, you know, quick, easy, repetitive tasks for a lot of reward. So, and also I've been playing Shadows of Doubt too, sort of off and on. Again, I've talked about it. It's a detective game, takes place in a completely randomly generated area that's built on voxels. And collect evidence, find who the murderer is, that kind of thing. You're given like a lot of ways to do it, and of course it's completely broken, which is part of the fun, because trying to break this game is a joy in and of itself. But yeah, that's what I've been playing. So Daniel, what about you?
Yeah, I wasn't here last week because I was getting ready for GDC, and that was actually day zero. So I'll go ahead and talk about that in a little bit. But as for what I was playing prior to that, I played through and platinum Split Fiction. The game came out a little more than a week ago. And yeah, like this is more Haze Light goodness. So, you know, the game is about these two girls, and they're actually writers. One of them is a writer of science fiction. The other one is a writer of fantasy fiction, and their ideas pretty much clash. So what happens is they're being invited to this company called Raider Publishing on the assumption that they're going to be signing a publisher deal because, you know, that's what writers want. Turns out that ends up being a whole science facility. And, you know, they're invited there with a bunch of writers and they're all put into a bunch of machines. The fantasy writer is like, all right, let's go ahead and do this. Whereas the sci-fi one is a little bit more negative. She doesn't want to do anything. She thinks it's weird. And, you know, she tells the scientist that, oh, no, I don't want to do this. Eventually, she is like sort of forced into it. And she is accidentally pushed into the same machine that Zoe is in. And all of a sudden, they find themselves in the same parallel world, and it's a sci-fi world. So that's where the video game stuff kind of begins here. So, you know, if you've played a Haze Light game before, you'll be in familiar territory. It's a 3D platformer, and it is only playable via multiplayer. You can play alone as much as you think you can do, but it won't amount to anything because you need your partner there. And yeah, like I said, the first thing is science fiction, so all of a sudden, one girl has a blade, the other one has a whip, and, you know, you want to just try to figure out certain puzzles and get through obstacles using the abilities that you have. When you beat a level, you all of a sudden go into the other girl's mind, and all of a sudden it's fantasy. So the first one that we dealt with, was in the world of ogres and stuff, and again, if you've played a Haze Light game before, there's going to be a whole lot of Easter eggs for other stuff. So, you know, in the fantasy level, we were climbing up this big tower, and then we had to jump off, and what happens? You know, you jump off a tower and all of a sudden land in a haystack, aka the Leap of Faith from Assassin's Creed, which is awesome, because that's what I ended up playing later. But yeah, there are so many Easter eggs here, so much genre bending. There's a Metroid-y level where it's side-scrolling, and, you know, you have your beam that you use your right stick to aim with, and, you know, the buttons to shoot. There also are these side stories in the game where they're kind of hidden. Basically they're bubbles. And for example, if you're in a sci-fi world and you find a side story, you're going to end up playing a shorter, story on the opposite side. So you play fantasy. So like, one of the fun ones, and they mention it in the trailer, is this, fantasy world where you're in your pigs, and, you know, one of them has the ability to sort of fly by farting, and they fart rainbows. Ooh. And then the other girl has like this springy slingy thing, so she can just tower themselves above. And it gets to a point where, you know, you do all the obstacles, and then all of a sudden you go into a grinder, and then the grinder turns them into hot dogs. And, you know, the hot dogs can roll around, they could put mustard and ketchup on there, they can go ahead and grill themselves. I won't tell you what happens thereafter. It's absolutely crazy, but it's somewhere along the lines of what happened in It Takes Two with Cutie the Elephant, if anybody knows the reference.
God, please, you had to remind me.
Yeah,
God, and that like, poor stuffed animal, God.
It's funny that Haze Light just has this style and all these things that you can remember. And like, you know, this game is fantastic. It's my game of the year so far. I don't think that this game is as good as It Takes Two, primarily because It Takes Two hit me with those surprises first. You know, when you know what to expect, you know, it just doesn't feel like, you know, that it doesn't feel like that new of an experience. But, you know, because it had like its own moments, again, the hot dogs are what I'm going to go ahead and compare to Cutie. And, you know, it just goes ahead and takes form there. By the way, this is a little bit of a spoiler, but, you know, it doesn't really spoil anything. Cutie is in the game. You can go ahead and shoot Cutie, and things fall off, and it becomes a trophy. So, total fun stuff there. But yeah, the genre bending, the genre bending is actually better than it was in It Takes Two. Like, the main thing I was really impressed with the last game was how polished each game felt. Like, they really felt like new games that you can just play from there. And it's the same thing with Split Fiction, except the polish is a little better. You know, I mentioned the Metroid level. There's one side story where the game becomes SSX tricky, where you actually have to snowboard and grind on rails, and the tricks actually felt good. You know, they didn't feel like super premium, but like everything made sense. Everything was good. And yeah, like, it was great. As far as length, it is about the same length as It Takes Two. The one thing that I do want to mention is it's a little bit harder. There are definitely more timing and skill-based challenges that, you know, newer players or people who aren't familiar with video games are probably going to struggle with. But that being said, like, you know, every puzzle definitely feels satisfying to solve, especially when you're doing it together. I do have friends who have played the game online. And by the way, the big thing with Split Fiction, as opposed to the other Hazelight games, is that the friend code is now cross-platform. So, you know, somebody on Xbox can play with somebody on PlayStation. They can play with somebody on PC. The game is not on Switch, so there's that. Maybe we'll see that on Switch, too. Who knows? But, yeah, another great title. Definitely one of my favorite games of the year so far. And, yeah, I think Hazelight is definitely up there, at least for me. Like, they're up there with Naughty Dog and Nintendo as games that I'm going to buy regardless of the reviews, just because, like, I know that they've given me so many good memories. So, yeah, great game. The other game I've been playing was Assassin's Creed Shadows. This game came out on Thursday. I've had it for about a week before that. And I've put in about 15, 20 hours. You can read the review in progress on Smashpad. And the reason why I didn't finish it was, of course, I was at GDC.
Yeah.
But, you know, just to go ahead and talk quickly a little bit about Assassin's Creed Shadows. This is going to be more along the veins of Origin, Odyssey, Valhalla. You know, you have the open world. It is huge. And yeah, you're back in feudal Japan. The game starts off with Yasuke, and then all of a sudden you jump into Naoe, and this is where my complaints begin. Again, I've been playing the game for 20 hours, and I have only used Naoe. Yasuke is only used in the very beginning, and I'm sure that, you know, we get to a part where their stories sort of interject, but I've only played Naoe so far, and I will say, like, although, like, it is fun, the stealth in this version of the game is definitely up there as far as the best I've ever played, and her story is really, really good. As for how the story is told, you know, she has sort of a vendetta that she wants to go ahead and you know, uphold. At the same time, like, you want to see where her origins come from. So part of my favorite parts of the game is meditating, because when you meditate, you sort of like unlock a chapter previous to like what's happening now. And you know, you definitely see how she's grown. She is definitely the daughter of like a fierce warrior from her village, so it's cool seeing her sort of grow in that vein. That being said, you know, being a woman, nobody is going to take her seriously, and like, while she doesn't have like the strength as all the brute men, she is strong in her own right, but her asset is in her speed and being able to, you know, just stay stealthy. My one complaint with the presentation so far is that the English voice acting is terrible. You know, there might be reasoning. I think a lot of the development happened during the SAG-AFTRA strikes, you know, so obviously, like, you're going to have issues, like, getting real voice talent then.
I've heard it suggested that apparently some of the voice talent is apparently AI-generated.
I don't know, but I also would not be surprised if that were the case. Like, you know, I don't want to sound extra harsh in my approach here, but it sounds like they took random people in Japan, threw them in a white van, and made them read.
Ah.
Like, that's how bad the voice acting sounds. Naoe herself sounds okay. I wouldn't say she sounds all that great. But, you know, everybody else is, like, mixing their words together. Like, even if you're somebody who watches, you know, a lot of anime and have seen, you know, Japanese voice actors read the English, it's not as bad as what you're seeing in Assassin's Creed Shadows. It is terrible. That being said, the default option is actually to have everybody speak in their dialect, but by doing that, no one actually speaks English in the game. All of the languages so far are Portuguese and Japanese, which makes total sense. You know, I don't think anybody actually spoke English during that time of, you know, where we are in feudal Japan. So that's great. But of course, you know, you're gonna want to pay full attention. And for me, I'm unfortunately that gamer who, once I reach a cutscene, I'm going to go ahead and look at my phone in a little bit. And, you know, if they're speaking another language, it's going to be tough for me to get their attention. But anyway, you know, the game is really, really solid so far. If I had to give it, like, you know, a rating based on what I've played so far, it would be a 3.5 to a 4, just because, you know, I don't really know what to expect with Yasuke as of yet. But as I mentioned, you do use Yasuke in the very beginning, and he pretty much controls, like, you know, a battle tank where he's just totally unstoppable. You just kill from there. And that's very different with Assassin's Creed. Like, Assassin's Creed gameplay, at least in this modern era, has always been about, you know, the stealth and being nifty with your skills. And Yasuke is just more of a powerhouse in that regard. Again, I haven't unlocked him yet. That's been my main complaint. But so far, I've been really enjoying the game. And I'm looking forward to diving back in. I haven't beaten an Assassin's Creed game in a really, really long time, and I'll tell you that this one is good enough for me to actually want to do that. So hopefully, I definitely get there. Anyway, just to go ahead and talk about GDC, I've been to GDC like 5 times in my life. This was my first time as media. A little bit of inside baseball. GDC is actually one of the harder events to get into as media, so, like, you know, me getting there for Smash Bad, it means we're doing something right. So I definitely appreciate all of our viewers, obviously all of our staff, for doing the work that they do. Otherwise, you know, we probably wouldn't be able to do this stuff. But yeah, GDC was awesome, and it was very different with what I've had before, now that we're actually media. So I didn't actually have time to really go into the Moscone Center and really enjoy the expo. I've had meetings and preview opportunities left and right. So right now, I'm just going to go ahead and talk about the preview opportunities because they were awesome. First up was Day of the Devs. This happened last Sunday, and Sunday is considered day zero of GDC. And yeah, there were more than 50 different demos available to play. I played quite a few, but I'm going to go ahead and talk about 3. The first one was Dreams of Another. This was a third-person shooter game that you might have seen from a previous PlayStation State of Play. I forget who the developer is, but, like, this one was weird. Like, when you look at the game, it looks like a stained glass window, and, you know, the main thing here is there wasn't really much hand-holding, and even though you're holding a gun, you're not actually killing anything. The basic thing that the gun serves is to just sort of clear up the world a little more. You shoot all around you so that you're able to see things more clearly, and that's one way the visual style definitely just flexes here. It looks amazing. That being said, I didn't really have any help in the demo, so all I was doing was running around, shooting, and showing doors and various pathways and staircases, none of which I was able to go into. So, yeah, this is definitely something I want to jump into if we definitely have another demo, whether it be on PlayStation or Steam in the future. I'm not sure if it's on Steam, so, you know, someone can check for me, but it's definitely something to look out for. Next is Big Hops. There's a preview for this one on Smash Pad. This is probably one of the best demos I played during the show. You play it's a 3D platformer, so yeah. You know, you pretty much have your foray there, and you play a frog. I was a little shocked because the frog didn't have, like, that big of a jump. It was more of a normal jump. But then eventually, as I got through the game, you know, I learned about his tongue lashing. He can pull things with his tongue. He can use it as sort of a swing. And eventually you get access to these different items. So I find this mushroom, and you know, if you eat the mushroom, you can go ahead and gain some health. But at the same time, the mushroom, when you throw it, it'll turn into a trampoline. So you can jump on it to reach new heights. And then there's also an acorn. Acorn, if you throw it at places, it'll turn into a beanstalk or like some sort of vine to climb. And I noticed right away that this game, like, didn't really feel like full-on 3D platformer. It kind of felt more like Breath of the Wild or Tears of the Kingdom, because it pretty much gives you the idea that you have to go from point A to point B, but they don't really tell you how to do that. They really want you to just make you discover ways to get there, and I was doing things like combining the vines to make a longer vine, and it kind of made me think of Tears of the Kingdom, where my answer to everything was get a wooden plank and attach it to another wooden plank and attach it to another wooden plank so I can go ahead and climb or run my way there. And that being said, there is a climbing system. When you climb, you know, you definitely use up a status stamina wheel, and your stamina wheel is a leaf, and that, you know, that was a lily pad, and I thought that was really cute. And yeah, like, this is definitely one of the more polished demos I've ever played. I was talking to the dev. They plan on publishing it themselves, but that being said, they don't have a release date. And that made me sad, because I feel like this game is ready now. So I look forward to eventually hearing more on this game. Again, that was big hops. The next game I played was Building Relationships. This game is built by, I think, one or two people in Thailand. And yeah, like, this game is beyond weird. It's dumb, even. Basically, you play a house. And with this house, you can roll around hills, jump around, things like that. It is a cozy game through and through. But the weird thing about this game is that it's also a dating simulator. And you use the house to flirt with other houses, flirt with apartments, flirt with barns. You can go fishing. And when you're fishing, instead of fishing for fish, you're fishing for cars. This game is absolutely bizarre. The visual style reminds me of something out of, like, the PlayStation 1, kind of like a short hike, things like that. And yeah, this game was beyond weird. I was laughing at all of the dialogue, all of the pan face, just awkwardness. And yeah, this game is very up my alley as far as, like, just being weird. And, you know, I look forward to playing it some more. I believe you might still be able to find a Steam demo for it, but yeah, definitely a fun one. Moving on, I went to the Mix Showcase the next day. This was co-hosted by Kinda Funny. And yeah, there were a lot of different indie developers there. Devolver and Annapurna Games were there. Yeah, it was definitely a fun time. The three games that I had the most fun with, one was Shotgun Copman. This one was, I believe, revealed last week also. It's from the same developer as the guys that made My Friend Pedro. So it's very much a shmup, but this game is kind of like a precision platformer with a shmup, except that there's no jump button. The main way you jump is by shooting downward, and you can move faster by, you know, shooting your shotgun in certain directions. So if you shoot your shotgun left, your guy is going to move right real quickly. You shoot right, he's going to move left. So if you shoot down left, he'll go upper right diagonally. So it's that kind of thing. You want to be able to avoid other enemies or bullets. But yeah, like, there's sort of a speedrun element to it, where the game is all about going from point A to point B. All of the levels are really, really short. It's just a matter of knowing how to use your guns in the right way. So the left trigger ended up being the shotgun I was talking about, and then the right trigger ended up being the regular gun. And you can also find some power-ups on there to do things more quickly or do more damage to the stage. It was really a lot of fun. I really vibed with it. I played this game for like 30 minutes, which is a long time in these events, because, like, you have a lot of people drinking behind you, hoping, you know, that they have their chance next. But it was pretty good. I was drawing a crowd, and people were just laughing along with me. It was a good time. And then the last game I want to talk about, or no, the second game I want to talk about from that event is called EO Prism. This game is made by a new studio called Independent or something Accessories, but yeah, they're pretty cool. They're like an 8-man team, and they have a Kickstarter. And this game is pretty much math. One of the comparisons I saw was this game is Doom except with algebra, and you know, I definitely vibe with that. So this game is a first-person shooter, and all of the enemies in this game have sort of a mathematical expression or equation to them. So if you see a robot with 1 plus 1, you want to cycle through your bullets with the left and right bumpers to find the right number. So if you see 1 plus 1, you want to find 2 and then shoot them. You see 1 minus negative 1, which is the same thing as 1 plus 1, which is equal to 2, so you find your 2 and shoot. And yeah, like, we were in this map that was pretty much a school. We went through a basketball court shooting these things. We were at a theater. And yeah, once you finish the game, it'll measure your accuracy, like how fast you were able to solve certain equations, how fast you were able to shoot things, how accurate you were with your shots. It was definitely a fun thing. Like, it's yeah, sure, it's educational. I heard they're having deals with libraries and schools and stuff like that. So it's a pretty nifty thing. I believe they're on Kickstarter for about another week. They have like I believe it's a $15,000 goal. So yeah, I hope they hit it. It was definitely a whole lot of fun. And then the last one from Mix Showcase I want to talk about is Despelote. This has been shown in several indie presentations for right now. And This game has sort of a weird art style where it kind of reminds me of Return of the Obra Dinn with the whole like one color background, and all of a sudden the characters are all hand drawn. And this game is about a kid growing up in some place in, I believe it's Ecuador, and it starts off in school with the, you know, the teacher talking about his random stuff, and all of a sudden you go to recess and you just kick a ball, and you kick the ball with your friends, kick the ball alone, whatever it may be. It's just a slice of life game, and it was a whole lot of fun. I never would have tried this game if it weren't for like one of our friends in PR just really promoting it, and I'm glad I did. It was a good time. This game comes out pretty soon too, so I'll definitely pay some attention to it. And then the last two I want to talk about, I played at ID at Xbox. The first one is Hella. This game is about a mouse, and this mouse has the ability to like swing across certain trees like he was Spider-Man. Like he uses yarn and stuff like that, and it's a really fidelic game. Like it's cute, but it definitely has its realism. You know, if you're familiar with The Borrowers or Honey, I Shrunk the Kid, you kind of have the same vibes there. You have the grass, you have the playground, you have houses, things like that, running through bottles. There's a lot of puzzles to solve. There's an interesting shadow system where if you hold the button, basically you make a copy of that mouse, and then you can go ahead and do something else. And it's sort of a way to, like, save scum. Like, you know, something I always did with like NES games on the Switch is like, all right, I'm going to create a save state here, so if I die, I can go ahead and start here. It's sort of the same thing with Hella, but it's actually built into the gameplay. It was a little bit rough. The tutorial still has some work to do as far as getting the build right, but I really enjoyed what I played. I think they're planning for a 2026 release on Xbox Game Pass and more, so that's definitely a game to take a look at. And then the last game I want to take a look at, or I want to talk about, is the game that I'm probably most excited for this year. It's Clair Obscur Expedition 33. This game looks absolutely phenomenal. If you haven't seen it yet, and if you were to search it on YouTube, like, it is very medieval, while at the same time, like, having a steampunk kind of feel with the way their characters are designed. It is very realistic. And then the one thing that'll throw you off is that it has a turn-based battle system. So it's pretty much a Japanese RPG, like, built by a few guys in Europe. And yeah, it's definitely a good time. Ben Starr is a voice actor here. And yeah, I had a good amount of time with the battle system. It is kind of like Persona and the Mario RPGs put together, because, you know, with Persona, instead of cycling through menus, you press buttons to go through those menus. And then all of a sudden, when it's time to attack, you have QTEs to attack and defend. And I was getting them wrong a lot, so, you know, I was definitely, like, getting killed. But, you know, when you land them properly, it definitely feels good. There were definitely some puzzles to solve in the outer world, and, like, that was a whole lot of fun. And this game is coming out late next month, so hopefully we'll be able to get our hands on it soon. But yeah, like, that was GDC. Again, it was my first time there as media. Definitely a fun experience. They even gave us like a meal card so that we'd be able, with $75 in there. So we had to like spread $75 over the course of the 5 days that I was there. And a lot of the food in San Francisco was really expensive. But yeah, like, it was definitely a good time, and it was a good precursor to Summer Game Fest, which we hope to be at as well. So yeah, that's been about it, and I hope to jump back into Assassin's Creed soon.
All right,
so yeah, let's get to some news.
Mm-hmm.
And first up here, we got some Game Pass stuff. This is a weird little list here, because all of it's done by the end of this week.
Yep.
They don't see it's such a weird time, but we'll walk through it. Let's see. Available now on Game Pass Ultimate and PC Game Pass is 33 Immortals, which is the newest game from the team that did, I forget, Jotun and a bunch of other games. That's Thunder Lotus, which is looks like a fun game. I played a little bit of it during the alpha test they offered on the Xbox Insiders program. So yeah, it's kind of like a 33 player roguelite kind of battle royale kind of thing, where you're gearing up to face a boss at the end, and trying to survive that entire time, because Obviously, having 33 people makes a boss a little bit easier.
Mm-hmm.
But along the way, you're gonna obviously have people drop out and all that. So that's a new looking game. I'll probably have to check that out this week.
Mm.
Let's see. Also available now, Game Pass Standard has Octopath Traveler 2 now, as well as Train Sim World 5. Let's see. Those are the only ones there for that. Also available now on Game Pass Ultimate, PC Game Pass, and Game Pass Standard, Mythwrecked, Ambrosia Island. Mm. Yeah, I think this is kind of a, like a, not a visual novel, but probably more just narrative adventure game of sorts, because I think you have sort of a sandboxy area to explore.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think you're necessarily doing a bunch of combat or anything. I think it's just talking to people and hanging out and doing stuff, that kind of stuff. So that's a game you can check out if you want something that's a little more chill.
Yeah.
Let's see, for Game Pass Ultimate, PC Game Pass, and Game Pass Standard, this will be on Tuesday, Blizzard Arcade Collection.
Mm-hmm.
So that's finally available on there.
Yeah.
It's the collection. It has a, let's see, 5 classic console games from Blizzard's early days. Blackthorn, The Lost Vikings, Lost Vikings 2, Rock and Roll Racing, and RPM Racing. And it has a bunch of museum stuff to unlock as well. Mm-hmm. Concept art, music, behind the scenes interviews, and more stuff like that. So that's one you can check out.
Mm-hmm.
You want to see some old Blizzard stuff. And then for new things, this will be Thursday, I believe, Adam Fall, for Game Pass Ultimate and PC Game Pass.
Yep.
That is a survival action game from Rebellion.
Yep.
The team behind Sniper Elites and all that. So I'm curious to see that, see what that is.
Mm-hmm.
Because that looks pretty neat.
Yeah. I've heard good things about Adam Fall. Still, I might give it a shot. Still not entirely sure, though.
Yeah, it's at 5 years after the Windscale nuclear disaster in Northern England.
Which is a thing that actually happened, by the way.
Yeah, you get to be British.
Yeah.
One of these kind of games, so. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
That's a thing to check out. They also have, I guess, some games coming to Game Pass Core.
Mm-hmm.
On Wednesday, it looks like. Batman Arkham Knight, Monster Sanctuary, and Tunic. So if you have Game Pass Core, that's a few more games you'll be able to check out later this week.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's pretty much it. Not really much to talk about there.
Mm.
So yeah, there you go. Let's see. We do have some other stuff happening this week. We had a bit of a surprise announcement here. That's a classic horror adventure game, I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream.
Yep.
I will be coming to the consoles, PS5, PS4, Xbox Series X and S, Xbox One, and Switch on March 27th.
Yeah.
Night Dive Studios is the one working on this. So, yeah, that's been out on PC since the 90s. Yeah, and they, I believe, re-released it again not too long ago. So it's based on the book. The popular book, and you get to enjoy all that stuff in a video game.
Yeah. Well, yes and no. First of all, it's not a book. It's a short story. But it uses the sort of original short story as sort of like a template to work on. 'Cause in the original story, it's not quite as elaborate as what this game uses, but essentially the story is there's this point in the future where there's like this huge world war, and all the various big superpowers, they start creating these enormous supercomputers, and these supercomputers, they keep growing and growing to the point that they sort of honeycomb the inside of the Earth, and at some point they all connect together and become sentient and goes completely mental and annihilates all life on Earth except for 5 individuals that they keep together living for eternity so that they can basically torture them until the end of time. Yeah.
Yeah, fun stuff.
Yeah. It was written by Harlan Ellison way back in the 1960s. Very much of the era, but is considered legendary. And he's actually in the game. He is the voice of the supercomputer.
Yeah.
He's actually the voice of the supercomputer in a lot of media that adapts that story. But yeah. And yeah, this game is legendary for a number of reasons. One of them being the fact that it has a couple of points that have that adventure game logic. And if you're wondering what I'm talking about, it's like if you grew up playing point and click adventure games, you know what I'm talking about. The fact is that it is really freaking disturbing at times. Like it gets dark, dark, dark. And it's talking about subject matter that games back in the 90s were just not touching at all. Like we're talking about subjects like things like war crimes and cannibalism, sexual assault, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it is like it is legitimately a great game. It can be a little esoteric at times, but it is fantastic. It's considered legendary for a reason.
Yep. So yeah, that'll be out this week. Also coming out this week on Nintendo Switch Online.
Mm-hmm.
The Super Nintendo app is getting 4 new games from Koei.
Yep.
Koei Tecmo at this point, but 4 games that are sort of the sort of games that you had to be a very particular type of person to enjoy back then.
Mm-hmm.
Nobunaga's Ambition, Nobunaga's Ambition Lord of Darkness, Romance of the Three Kingdoms 4, Wall of Fire, and Uncharted Waters New Horizons.
Yep.
Very much a lot of strategy games and such there.
Yeah.
That would not blame anybody for having completely missed these games.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that'll be a few games you'll be able to check out on Friday when those are available. And see if you can enjoy them now.
Yeah. And just like all like Romance of the Three Kingdoms games, like anything related to that, it's the same story over and over again. We kind of know what the beats are. Like we know, starts out with the Yellow Turban Rebellion, then there's like a combined war where the corrupt Emperor Dong Zhuo is overthrown, then the country shatters into like 3 different groups that are all warring against each other. We know how the story goes.
Yeah.
But that's kind of not really the reason why people play those games.
Yep. But yeah, those will be available later this week. And let's see, we got some stuff for next week. Competing with the Nintendo Switch 2 Direct is Croc Legend of the Gabos remaster that will be out on April 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
On all platforms. People will be able to check that out and see the game that Argonaut claimed was originally supposed to be a Yoshi game, but then Nintendo denied them the ability to continue on making that, and they said, well, we'll make it a game about a crocodile.
Yeah, and coincidentally, they then came out later with Super Mario 64, which seemed to have used a bunch of the ideas that were originally used for this game when it was in development.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not saying that anybody stole anything. I'm just saying it's quite the coincidence that that happened.
Yeah, as we all know, Nintendo just steals their ideas from everybody else. Never does anything original.
Never.
The weird thing with this remaster is how high res all the like wall textures and such are, that it just looks real odd for a game that was originally on the PS1, where you're like, yeah, it's always supposed to be fuzzy at a certain point and not take your focus away from what you're supposed to interact with, but here it does in a bit of a weird way. But yeah, that'll be out next week, so people can check that out and see one of the second or third tier 3D platformers on the PS1 that people still think about from time to time. Let's see, on the week after that, on April 10th, we will finally have the Dave the Diver DLC called Ichiban's Holiday.
Yep.
Featuring Ichiban from the latter Like a Dragon games.
Mm-hmm.
Doing his thing, fighting people, and hanging out with the diver crew and all that. Not sure if this is going to be free or not. I would assume so, because I think all the other crossover DLC has been free, but we'll have to see when that finally does come out. But yeah, they we'll have that out in a couple weeks, so that'll be fun. The Ichiban and his big hair there. Doing all that, so yeah, there you go.
Yep.
Let's see, now a week after that, so there's iRobot, the Jeff Minter reimagining of the classic Atari arcade shoot 'em up. Will finally be out on April 17th on everything.
Yep.
As well as PS5 with PSVR 2 support. That'll be fun to see as he continues to, I guess, just pick whichever Atari property he likes and put his own stamp on it with the trippy visuals and lots of weird text fonts and all sorts of stuff that he can do in his games. So yeah, that's fun looking. So there's that. And then the week after that, a neat little game called Once Upon a Puppet will be out on April 23rd.
Yep.
This is a 2.5D puzzle platformer.
Yep.
Where you are playing as like a puppet character. Maybe a little bit of a Pinocchio style in here as you're a puppet that is sort of in this world of theater stuff that's going on, and you're trying to solve these puzzles and get around and do that kind of stuff. Looks like it has a really neat style to it and all that, and yeah, that looks looks neat. It'll be fun to see how that turns out, and yeah, that's your stuff that's coming out in the near future. We had some more stuff that got announced a little bit later. Particularly this one, Ruffy and the Riverside, will be out on June 26th. This is kind of a Paper Mario-ish open world action-adventure game. Very much has the like 2D hand-drawn characters, sprites, or you know, whatever you want to call it, moving around these 3D environments. Having their kind of fun stuff there that I've seen gameplay for it here and there, and that has always looked pretty fun. So that'll be out on June 26th, which is also the same day as Death Stranding 2, so that'll be a fun day there. And then we found out also on June 26th that System Shock 2 25th Anniversary Remaster will be out on all the consoles. Xbox, PlayStation, Switch for that. So this is a remaster of the classic System Shock 2.
Yep.
For the consoles. I guess also on PC as well, though it has been sold. But I guess Night Dive Studios is doing a remaster of this and improving some things. So here's to see if that's going to be free for PC people or not. But yeah, they are improving some things. Going to support 4K. Up to 144 frames per second and 120 frames on the consoles. More options, ultra wide screen supports, a bunch of other accessibility options and quality of life options. So, yeah, that'll be a fun time if you want to see one of the games that you know was made essentially as a precursor to BioShock.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I will say I've played the original System Shock 2. It's a good game, but it has been really showing its age, especially when it comes to like the actual gameplay. Just straight up, it is not nearly as intuitive or programmatically elegant as, you know, BioShock and the games that came after it are. It is very much a game of its time and place.
Yeah. Kind of that early immersive sim kind of game in the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Which was great for the people that were around for it then, but people came in much later. Oftentimes yeah. Have some trouble with it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I assume it probably has difficulty options to it for people to check out. So put it on easy. Make it a little mm-hmm. easier for yourself up front and see if you can get into it. So, but yeah, there you go. That's also out on June 26th. So you got an old game, an indie game, and Death Stranding 2, whatever the hell that is,
mm-hmm.
Out on the same day. So there you go yeah. for that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's see. We got another game here that was announced. Voivod, the Nuclear Warrior.
Yeah.
Was announced for PS5, Xbox, Switch, and PC. And it is a Metroid-y game based on the works of heavy metal band Voivod.
Yeah, I was looking at this in the show notes, and I was thinking, they can't be talking about what I think they're talking about, do they? And lo and behold, yeah, it is 100% related to Voivod. And I'm like, I'm surprised it took them this long to do that, but here they are.
Yeah.
I've been a Voivod fan for years, and... honestly, if anybody wanted to describe what their music was like, Voivod sounds like Slayer with really odd time signatures and like a strong French-Canadian accent. That's basically what Voivod is. And like the idea of them like making a game, you know, if you understand their work and you've listened to it and had their albums for a while, you would understand why, because Voivod musically has these like really... sort of high concept science fiction stories in a lot of their songs. They have like one or two actual like concept albums, but a big part of it also is like the graphics and artwork, which is done by their drummer. And I'm looking at the screenshots and like, yeah, it's definitely his art style, like 100%. And honestly, I kind of want to play this like very soon.
Yeah.
And yeah, like there's a bunch of references here too. The fifth screenshot they got here, that tank with the gun and the spikes on the treads is like from their second album. there's this, that spider skull thing. That's like their mascot. There's the dude on the tank in the first screenshot. Yeah. Like there's just a ton of references here.
Yeah. And yeah, they're going to be doing a Kickstarter for this in the next few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to support it and help fund it, that's a means for doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a mention here. Yeah, they have a Patreon page for the studio that's working on this game mm-hmm. as well. So if you want to follow them for behind the scenes stuff and see how things go, you can do that as well. Mm. But yeah, it looks pretty cool.
Yep.
So yeah, there you go. That'll be probably a ways off. Maybe mm-hmm. a couple years, depending on how far they are at this moment. But
yeah.
Speaking of things, it'll be a little bit closer. College football 26 is happening. Mm-hmm. It'll be out later this year. And we've found out that EA is upping the pay they're doing for players to get them in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Last year was $600 plus a copy of the game. This time around, due to the success, they've updated to $1,500 plus a copy of the game, which mm-hmm. is definitely a nice bonus there. I mean, as much as they probably should, considering how well that game sold.
Mm-hmm.
But with at least 10,000 players that they're trying to get into these games, they are definitely spending a decent chunk of money on just player licensing
mm-hmm.
Beyond all the school licensing and all that stuff that goes with it. So, yeah, that's it's a game that just requires a lot of money to get everything in it, license and all that. So, yeah, good news for the players that want to be in the game.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, I mean, like, you also have to realize too is that, you know, a very small percentage of these people are going to make it to the NFL, which means that, you know, a huge percentage are not going to make it. So, yeah, you go ahead and say 1,500 is still low. It's still 15. I personally don't care about them getting a free game, but at the same time, it's like, hey, might as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, there you go for that. Let's get to a shitty story here. The developers of this expansion for Ark Survival Evolved put out a trailer for this expansion. It's called Aquatica. They put out this week and has made the fans extremely angry because it very obviously uses a ton of AI-generated footage for it.
Yep.
It just looks like nonsense.
Uh-huh.
When you watch it, and yeah, it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, it seems like fans have been very angry about this. Lots of dislikes on the video, and comments saying things like, this is disgusting and you should be ashamed of yourselves. What even is the point of an AI trailer? Another one saying, you're showing nothing. This is worse than having PowerPoint presentation about the DLC, which I believe is a thing they've done before. And yeah, this isn't the main studio that's worked on the series, Studio Wildcard. This is a different company called Snail Games Colorado, I believe, which is the American branch of a Chinese parent company. That is kind of wild to see that that's kind of the point, is that they have outsourced development of this game to an external company who then has, you know, people in Colorado making it and in the process using AI. Such a very, you know, ridiculous and poor way that just doesn't look interesting at all for something that should be interesting, because this is an expansion that's lets you go under the water, you know, and find new creatures down there and all sorts of wildlife and whatnot down there. And that's a pretty exciting sort of thing to add to a game like that. Yeah, just going with this sort of cheap and poor looking AI that just, you know, up front, like, this doesn't represent anything you're going to see in the game. So what is even the point of this kind of trailer? So much so that Studio Wildcard very much tweeted out at a certain point, Ark Aquatica is being developed by at Snail Games USA Colorado. Please follow them for more updates. So here, Studio Wildcard remains entirely dedicated to the production of Ark Survival Ascended and Ark 2, and we're excited to bring Ark Lost Colony to you later this year. Very much being like, this is this other company's fault. We're not doing anything with that. So please direct all of your ire to them. And so, yeah, that's a whole thing there. So, yeah, especially because it seems like fans have not been enjoying much of the Ark content they've been making of late. As people that make videos just about this franchise, one here called Chromita, saying, how can every decision y'all make be so horrible? So many amazing artists and devs work on this IP to make this game look great, and y'all disregard each and every one of them. Which seems like a fair criticism. So, yeah. There you go. Yeah. Just disregarding all the artists and such you have working on this stuff. Make this kind of trailer. It shows where they got their priorities at. It's not a great one. So, yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's see what else we got here. We got some potential good news on the horizon here. With Game Informer shutting down last year. It was a very upsetting thing to happen, especially the way that GameStop basically shut down the website, so any sort of content that was on it, people could not access any of the articles and features and whatnot. GameStop did a great job of burning every bridge that they could to people maybe wanting to have anything to do with them.
Yeah.
But earlier this week, a bunch of the former writers and editors and people running the magazine and all that tweeted out various versions of these like teaser videos, as well as the Game Informer account itself that teased a new thing coming from them. It was basically, it was kind of like video game sort of, do you want to continue? And showing the yes and clicking on that and being like, stay tuned. Eventually, they may announce that on Tuesday, March 25th, teasing some sort of announcement. So the word may be that somebody was able to acquire the rights to Game Informer or the license to it to do their own thing that GameStop would not have to fund or be responsible for anymore, which would be great, especially if they get a bunch of the people that have that were there at the end and sort of left in the lurch, and not many of them have found steady work since then, unfortunately. But yeah, it's it would be very cool if that's how it goes. We'll see. I don't suspect this is going to be some trick thing. I'll be like, huh, it's AI. AI is Game Informer now. We're not going to pay a single person for this except for us. You give us money and all that. So I don't think that's how it's going to go from what it seems like. So yeah, that's something neat to keep an eye on this week.
We will see. It's Tuesday, so we'll see. Obviously, I really loved Game Informer, and I was very angry when GameStop did what they did to it. So much so that I canceled my GameStop membership. And I have not renewed it since. But, you know, the idea of them being an independent thing, not having to answer to the absolute money-grubbing bastards at GameStop Corporate, I'd be, you know, even if it ends up being a niche thing, I don't care. I'm fine with it.
Yeah. I mean, like, a lot of the staff that got let go after that are, you know, some of the best and brightest, you know, content creators in the industry. And yeah, they're a hell of a great team. And it was definitely a breath of fresh air to, you know, wake up, scroll Instagram, and all of a sudden, you know, see guys like Alex Van Aken and others be able to post these teasers. Like, it's really exciting, and I'm really happy for them if this is what we hope it is. At the same time, it's like, I wonder what kind of changes we'll see. And all of them are going to be great together, whatever they choose to be. So I'm definitely looking forward to whatever happens on Tuesday. And, you know, if freelancers can get involved, even better. But, this is great.
Yep. So, yeah, that's that seems like that'll be a fun thing to look forward to this week. Let's see. Another fun thing that seems to have happened is that Sony has established a new studio with Jason Blundell called Dark Outlaw Games.
Yep.
He was part of a previous studio they had formed with a number of former Call of Duty people that was called Deviation Games, I believe. And it seems like that went poorly because from what I've seen of people that worked there, seemed to throw a lot of blame at a number of the heads that did not seem to give a shit about the people working there. Just seemed to want to get some Sony money and run. If it fell apart, and that seemed to work out for them. But Sony seemed to recognize some of the people that were well-regarded there still. Jason Blundell, who Call of Duty people would know, was a producer on the Black Ops games that's most well-known for the zombies modes in many of those games. And so, yeah, they... he was on a podcast with Jeff Gerstmann and talking about, you know, his career and all that and all the ways he got into the games industry and the various sorts of projects he worked on, like that terrible Catwoman game, amongst others. And at the end, kind of talked about what his next thing was. thing. I've had the amazing opportunity to create a new studio within PlayStation Studios for Sony. The studio is called Dark Outlaw. And so Dark Outlaw Games have been working away in the shadows for a while. When we got something to talk about, we'll step out into the light. You know, the story for me is about the game, not about the studio. So the reason why we're not doing a fanfare or shout about it from the rooftops is like, let's get something right. So yeah. Mm-hmm. Seems to want to kind of make his big splash with this new studio when they've got something to show for people. And so that'll be interesting to see what sort of game they're making. As I imagine, it's probably going to be a shooter of some kind because that's what he's been best at working on. So we'll have to see how that goes. But some more possibilities for a new studio in Sony. So we'll see how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, news about a new studio is always good, especially when it's from a AAA. You know, I just wish it wasn't like hot off the tail of layoffs happening, because you know you want to be able to move people around. But at the end of the day, you know, when you form a new studio, you kind of know who you want in it. And I don't know what to expect, but if Sony puts their name on it, and after all of the stuff that they've dealt with live service, hopefully they're going back into a direction that they're used to.
That's nice to see. We do have some GDC news here to cap off the show. The big one out of the show was the formation of the United Video Game Workers Union.
Yep.
Through the Communication Workers of America. That seems to allow people to sign up from the US and Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Even people that are laid off from their current jobs are able to sign up for help with that. So yeah, that'll be interesting to see how that goes, to create this kind of trade group of sorts for the industry, for people that can pay dues and resources and all that to fight for them to get better contracts and pay and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it'll be cool to see how this goes and how easily these people are able to get and keep jobs, because that's the big fight here, is kind of getting all the studios and publishers and whatnot to accept the people that are signed up for this.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to see how that goes in the future. But for now, very cool announcement.
Yeah. Awesome. Also, don't look at the Twitter link that's in that. In that story, just trust me on this. It's Twitter. It's the worst people on the planet in one space. So you know exactly how it's going to go.
Yeah. Are you saying these are all people that are bootlickers for corporations?
Yep.
Okay.
And also one guy who's trying to get Hassan Piker into it, which, okay, not as bad as the others. But yeah, it's mostly just bootlickers.
All right. Well, there's always...
Also, you should just avoid Twitter in general for anything. It's your mental health will thank you.
Yeah. There's that. There's this one kind of tragic thing that happened. Life is Strange Double Exposure won an award during the GDC Awards for social impact. But nobody was able to collect it because... most of the team was laid off that would have done so, and none of them were at GDC or knew about it to be able to accept it. So that's a fun thing. Somebody here's former Deck Nine narrative designer Elizabeth Ballou on Blue Sky saying it's fitting that nobody was there to accept the GDC award that Double Exposure won because we all got laid off, LOL. Bunch of us are at GDC, but we didn't know we were even nominated, so nobody was prepared to accept anything.
Yeah. Having gone to GDC a bunch of years, I keep forgetting that they have an award show, and it's really unfortunate. I mean, like, you look at screenshots of the event from the stream, they have a really elaborate stage, Alexa Ray Correa is an amazing host. She has been for the last 2 years now. Mm-hmm. But no one ever talks about the awards and their nominees. And like, just to bring it back to this particular story, this game isn't even that good, and in my opinion, should not have even been nominated for this category. It's like, just because it's a Life is Strange game, it automatically gets nominated for the Impact Award. And yeah, like, honestly, I disagree with most of this list, and I played most of these, so it is what it is there. But yeah, it is very fitting that nobody was there because of the layoffs. Although, to be fair, like, a lot of the people there at the awards were either like going to be there for the top ones, or they're also like just mainstays from people who were in the convention hall the entire day and want one more thing to watch. That being said, like, you know, I would love for it to like be in the same breath as a DICE or a Game Award, but they're just not there, and I can't tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because yeah, I believe it's like the membership for the group that votes for the GDC awards are the only ones that are available for these. Mm. There's some limitation for that stuff.
They definitely got to get the journalists more involved with these categories, because some of the games don't make sense on here. But yeah, that's just me.
Yeah, I was looking at the GDC awards page, and it's like, it's voted on, or the nominees are nominated by the, what do they call it here? The International Choice Awards Network.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they don't really explain too well who the hell that is.
Mm.
Where they come from, but yeah, that's there's a whole list here of various ways that people get nominated and how the finalists are selected and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, but I believe it is the ICANN members that do this. So yeah, there's like some limitation to it. I don't even know how many people are even in that. So yeah, that's a whole thing. But yeah, the GDC awards had a bunch of interesting winners. Let's see, best debut was Balatro.
Mm-hmm.
Best visual art, Black Myth Wukong. Best audio, Astrobot. Best narrative, Metaphor ReFantazio. Social impact award, as we said, was Life is Strange Double Exposure. Innovation Award was Balatro. Best Technology was Astrobot. Best Design, Balatro. Audience Award was Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Game of the Year was Balatro. The Pioneer Award was Lucas Pope, which is a great choice. And Lifetime Achievement Award was Sam Lake of Remedy Entertainment. So yeah, this interesting list, kind of covering a lot of the main games that have won awards for the last for 2024.
Mm-hmm.
With your Balatro's, Astrobots, Metaphor, Black Myth Wukong, and Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. So yeah, is a neat list. Gonna see if they got anything else here for what else is going on. No, but then we had the IGF awards, which also happens at GDC. This is an indie game festival that I believe is mostly full of nominations and such from media and whatnot. These are the winners here of the IGF awards with the award amounts that they are received. There's Excellence in Visual Arts. I think all of these are 2,000 except for the grand prize, which is 10,000. Haunty, which is a great looking game. That's a good choice there. Excellence in Audio, Despalette, so that's cool. Excellence in Design, Tactical Breach Wizards.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely heard a lot of great things about that game. Excellence in Narrative, Caves of Cud. That game's supposed to be really good. The Nuovo Award, Consume Me. They got a handful of people here listed, so they're not part of a studio, just as a group.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's an indie game about it's about dieting and eating disorders and that kind of stuff, like a darkly humorous game about that kind of subject. So that's an interesting pick there. Best student game, Slot Waste. Audience game, The Ware Cleaner. Control.GDC award is Chroma Corp.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Seamus McNally grand prize goes to Consume.me. So that's cool. Those are games that people should Google and check out. Some of them are out now. Some of them are not out yet. As like Despalette is coming out in a couple of months here.
Mm-hmm.
Check out Consume.me. No, that's not out yet. But that looks like a really neat looking game. So there's that. Yeah, that's kind of it for the show and GDC. It seemed like GDC was probably a very weird show this year because of the effects of the government's immigration crackdown and a lot of people that would have benefited from being able to go to the show. A lot of them decided not to try in case they were to get, essentially kidnapped by the government at the airport or whatever. Had to deal with a lot of potential nasty stuff going on there.
Yeah, there was a lot of like various weird things happening, even towards the tail end. I believe there was a fire at Heathrow Airport in the UK on Friday, which is when a lot of people were going home, and they were stranded in San Francisco as a result. Mm-hmm. And San Francisco is a rough place to be stranded in just because the Bay Area is extremely expensive, and if that is not covered by your budget, you're going to go poor within 2 days. Yeah, that's not ideal. But yeah, obviously the issues with immigration and the green cards and whatnot are definitely going to affect people. I have heard from, people who are more on the expo floor that numbers were a lot smaller this year. I wouldn't know just because I spent most of my time outside the convention hall, but it wouldn't surprise me either.
Yeah, and GDC is kind of it's always a weird show because it is a very expensive show in a way that you wouldn't necessarily think it would be unless you have specific categories like students coming in or something like that get cheaper tickets. But if you're going there, as a legit dev and all that, it can be very expensive because you're paying for access to the talks and all that, and the internet archive they do of that stuff, all that.
I believe an all access pass is 4 digits, and it might not begin with a 1. Whereas the most basic one is the expo pass. I donated one to Amir Sotbot's group because I won one of his contests last year, and I wanted to pay it forward. That cost me $300 presale. So, yeah, it's definitely not a cheap ticket, and that does not cover, obviously meals, flights, hotels, whatever it may be. Like, in order for me to make it work, I actually booked 2 hotels using both points and $600 of my own money. And, luckily I had, free food from those hotels, because otherwise I would have spent a whole lot more. But, I've done this for years, so I know what I'm doing. But at the same time, not a lot of people are going to be willing to go with that amount of effort. So
yeah, I'm looking at the GDC page where it's like, you get a cheaper rate if you lock in back in November. And it can go up a little bit if you wait until January, and then it's like $2,300 for all access if you got it anywhere up to the show before the show started, or $2,500 to show up at on site and pay for it there.
Mm-hmm. The reality of the situation is AAA is I'm not going to speak for all of them, but a lot of them don't like conferences like these. They don't like E3, and the reason being is because if you want a booth, you're going to have to spend for them. You're not going to get a discount, and there is no return on that investment. And when you're looking at gaming this year, you definitely need an ROI because everything's a risk. You can lose your money and not really see much out of goodwill from it. And unfortunately, there isn't a whole lot of goodwill to go around. So it is what it is there. And, put that kind of burden on indie publishers who have no money, and it's just a mess overall. So the people who are there, luckily they are. But then the biggest boosts that I saw were from Tencent. And they're pretty much swimming in it. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's basically the people there have invested a lot of time and or money to be there. They're hoping to make the best of it. It definitely seems like they have a lot of add-on stuff. Yeah, if you want access to the GDC vault, it's an extra $650 on top of whatever tickets you bought. And there's like whatever GDC nights are. I guess that might be.
GDC nights is a new thing. It's kind of more social because they have things like karaoke, movies, board game nights. But it's definitely a huge thing for networking, especially for those who are involved in ERGs. The most active that I saw at GDC Nights is Jordan Bellamy's group, GGD. I believe it's something that supports gays in gaming and whatever it may be. I know AAPI in gaming got involved with some stuff at GDC Nights too. Netflix was one of the bigger sponsors, so it's that was actually one of my favorite new additions. I didn't have a whole lot of time to take part in it, but it definitely gives you a reason to be there at night, especially if you don't want to go to one of the events at a local bar, just because that area in San Francisco isn't actually the safest. But being around Moscone is definitely a whole lot better for attendees, especially first time.
Yeah, especially with some of the history of those kind of after show parties where people are getting drugged and all that. I have something that's should hopefully be even safer than that, because you're having it all controlled by.
They even had a buddy travel system. So at every exit for every Moscone hall, you can go ahead and talk to a volunteer about having them accompany you to your hotel, wherever that makes a radius to the hotel. That was a good touch as well.
Yeah. Which means they got a lot of good people in their ears about things they needed to do. Especially in the wake of COVID and all that, of ways to make the show safer and all that. I imagine probably a decent amount of people had masks and all that too.
I did overhear one thing. I think it was at it was on the expo floor for one of the bigger booths. I overheard someone say, I can't shake your hand because I'm sick. Dude, don't be there. So I'm glad they were masked, but I was like, oh, you probably should not be there in the first place, especially in the expo hall. So, you know, I do hope you can't really crack down on the safety of that sort of thing, but make better judgment.
Yeah, though I definitely can understand it if you paid, you know, thousands of dollars and be like, oh, I spent all this time and money. I don't want to waste it all.
I totally get it.
As long as they're prefacing that for anything they're doing, like, hey, I'm sick, so I don't want to spend too much of your time here in direct close proximity, but yeah, there's better ways of making it at least not as bad as the way some people would. But I think that is going to do it for the show this week. Seems like that was another GDC. Mm-hmm. We'll see how that goes in the future, but yeah, there's definitely plenty of reasons that people do go to like Summer Game Fest and do the show stuff they do there. It's probably more affordable and easier to access, but that's also just in LA, so all that much better than San Francisco.
No, it's interesting. Like, I just want to go over one more thing. Like, being there as media, you know, I mentioned that I had a lot of like appointments outside of the convention hall. It was interesting meeting, a whole bunch of dev and PR teams. And what we did was, like, we'd meet at the lobby of the M or the Marriott or whatever hotel we were in. And then we'd actually go into a room or suite to play their games. And I thought that was awkward. But apparently, like, that's something that they normally did during the height of E3 and stuff like that. And it was pretty cool because, like, you know, when you go to these rooms, they offer you a bottle of water or whatever it may be. And then you're able to play the game without being interrupted with the dev. And, you know, the thing about playing games at events is that you're not able to hear anything, especially if you or whether or not you have headphones on. But, you know, being in that intimate space and then going from there, signing the NDAs and whatnot, that was a pretty cool touch. So I know it's something that's always been done for media, but that was new for me. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I imagine that's probably something that's probably cheaper and maybe a bit easier to deal with, because they probably have, especially in those kind of areas, rooms set up for meetings and that stuff that you can rent out easily.
Exactly, and then you have PR like screening the people they bring in, so you know they're not going to bring in like total jerks or whatever it may be. So
yeah, So yeah, that's kind of the fun thing that can happen there.
Yep.
But yeah, that'll do it for the show this week. We'll be back next week with probably a good look at the next few months of releases, mm-hmm. especially as that has sort of finally solidified a bit mm-hmm. for new releases, and we'll talk about that stuff next week. But for the show this week, that'll do it. So yeah, thank you to Brandon and Danner for joining.
Always. Yep.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and stuff to talk about. Hopefully nothing too bad, but I'm sure something will happen. Luckily, we got out of here with it.
Yeah. Also, definitely check out the site. We have a whole lot of GDC previews based on the demos I played, and I'll be posting them sporadically through the week.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just checking out what we got up there. Yeah, if you do a thing on that, building relationships, I believe I have a video of that from the whatever Steam Next Fest.
Okay. That was actually one of the first previews I wrote a couple days ago. So that's already up.
But yeah, that's one I have a video of, and it is a very weird game. Because it's like if you're playing Katamari with an oddly shaped Katamari.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also momentum to it.
Yep.
You can kind of get the jumping good. You can just launch off of hills and such.
Oh, yeah. I was jumping onto hills and rocky mountains and whatnot. It was a very interesting experience.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's one of those fun little games that's in there. But, yeah, we'll be back next week. If you enjoy the show, for let friends and family know to check out the podcast. And select strangers that are also interested in cool games coming out in the near future. So, yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good one, and we'll see you all next week. Have a good one.
Bye.